Welcome to AFP. My name is Devang Desai, and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Nick Andrade. On today's show, we chat MLS returns after the international break, your CPL preview with York United's Michael Petrasso, more Euro 2020 fun, and of course, it's your questions on Ask AFP. Gentlemen, how are we doing? David, are you soccered out of your mind yet? How are you soccer-wise?
No, I still feel pretty good. It was a lot this weekend for sure, but I still have high energy. I think, you know, I still got some turbo boost in me. And it was a great weekend here because I got my birthday present, which was a stand-up electric grill, because it's against my lease's rule to have propane or coal or anything like that, or charcoal. So now I have a grill, which is life-changing, and I just grilled breakfast and lunch. So watch out, world.
What kind of things are you grilling, if you don't mind me asking? Like, what's your main go-to kind of stuff?
So I don't know if we have a grill sponsor here, so I apologize if we do, but it's a George Foreman brand stand-up grill. So it's not a George Foreman grill, but the grill top is like a griddle, like a George Foreman.
Yes.
So you don't have like the slats and stuff, and then it runs on electric. So you plug it in. Oh, I should unplug it. That's actually a good reminder. You turn it on. And then, so it means like you can cook whatever you want because nothing falls through. So I did eggs with toast and veggies on Sunday morning. And then this afternoon I did potatoes and a little bit of boneless chicken thighs. I can do fish. It says I watched a guy on YouTube cook a 3-pound steak on it. I don't think I'll do that. He said it took an hour. But yeah, that's the type of stuff, you know? So I'm officially a dad now, even though I don't have kids, because I have a grill.
Sean K is smiling somewhere, listening to this, just loving that. That's a fantastic update. Nick, how have you recovered from the absolute smackdown laid by Germany on Portugal?
You know what I'm starting to realize is that maybe sports is too much of my personality trait, because I literally have, every time one of my teams loses, I have a plethora of text messages of people sending condolences.
Are you okay?
To me.
Are you okay,
because
man?
I think they know that I tie so much of my emotions to my teams that they know that I'm probably hurting.
Nick, I think we should cut this conversation early, because every time your team loses, you say this, and then when your team wins, you come on the show and you're like, life is great. My team's the best. I love sports.
That's an unfair conversation. That's what I'm saying, is there should be some sort of meeting that we have, maybe an intervention of me, maybe stop. I need to stop tying my emotions to my sports teams.
What's the support like around you for your teams? Like, does everyone in your friends and family and close circle like help you support these teams?
No, like especially like Liverpool, nobody really supports Liverpool that I know of. But again, my Portuguese family, like we're all, you know, on our lifelines. If they lose, we're probably all crying. But
so everyone in your household is rooting for Portugal.
Yes, everyone. We are all like most of my family are all Portuguese. Like there's not many non-Portuguese people in our family.
Got it. Okay. Just checking. Devang, I think Nick's lying, but I'll accept it.
This is like listening to Mike Wallace grill someone like in prime 60 minutes, where I know where David's going with the question. I know what he's trying to uncover, but Nick is remaining steadfast.
No,
remaining
I honestly,
on topic.
So Nick, if we walked into your apartment during the game, everyone would have been wearing a Portugal jersey.
Well, no, because it's only me and my girlfriend. So and girlfriend cheers
Portugal
for Germany.
Fan?
No, she cheers for Germany. Yeah.
Is she super German?
Not fully. She's been a bit of German, yeah.
What's her level of connection to Germany?
She also cheers for Ukraine, because she has a bit of that in her, and she also cheers for Poland a little bit as well. So it's like a little mix. But she does cheer for Germany. That's her favorite team out of the three.
How big of a Germany fan is she?
During these tournaments, pretty damn big. Like, she's also upset if Germany loses.
And outside of the tournaments?
Outside of the tournaments, not so much.
Okay. See, let me just tell you from my point of view, is you live and die with Portugal. If she doesn't live and die with Germany, then she's got to tail it down when you guys play each other and let you do your thing. But if she lives and dies with Germany, then I accept
it's
it.
Fair.
That's how
it's
I
totally
see
fair.
Fandom.
But that's she, fair. So when Portugal lost, like she consoled me, right?
Okay.
So she didn't like, she felt bad. Whereas if Portugal beat Germany, I probably would have rubbed it in her face. So probably I'm, wow. the, Wow. I told her to her face. I'm like, if Portugal wins, then
this certainly is illuminating. I would say just
this is a reality TV show. It also can we just say, Devang, it probably helped that she had about 45 minutes to think about what she was going to say, since Goosens put them in the grave pretty early.
He put them in the hibachi. Yeah, he put them in the grill. He put them in, David, he put them in the George Foreman electric grill, you could say.
Ooh, that thing burns on level 4 or 5, because I don't have a temperature
We can continue this. We got to move on. We can continue this banter later. This consistent attack of Nick. We can, I'm all for it. But we'll
thanks, guys.
We got some other business to get to. We released that Patreon exclusive reaction episode to Canada making the octagon, making history against Haiti. Awesome response. 5 new subscribers on Patreon, which was great to see. Really made doing that episode worth it. And it was great. And we wanted to shout out all of you guys, and we'll continue to do that through the coming weeks. But we're going to shout out Chris this week for joining us on Patreon. Again, more exclusive stuff coming down the pipe if you guys want to join up. Plus, you get these episodes ad free. And you can jump on the Discord, where we literally are talking footy all the time. It's a pretty good deal. So join us at patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join us today when we come back. A whole lot of stuff. MLS, Euro, CPL. My God, coming up next on AFP.
We'll give away here. Giveaway here. Smith inside. Urso! Junior Urso. And Orlando leads it 3-2.
Welcome back to AFP.
That's such a theatrical call.
That's
Junior Urso. And Orlando leads it.
Mr. Goss, first of all, put some respect on his name. Yes. His name is Vic Router. He is a Canadian legend. That was a fantastic call. Make the final. Orlando 3, Toronto 2 in Orlando. Vic Router on the call. Boy, oh boy, MLS is back. Might have snuck up on you because it did on me when the games were listed and I saw Vancouver playing on Friday night. But much has happened in TFC land since they last played. Got the Jozy Altidore saga, Jefferson Soteldo hurt. A lot of things going on, but finally we had a game to watch to see how the team was doing. And the big move that Chris Armas made, David, was going with Quinton Westberg in goal. And boy, oh boy, it went poorly.
Have you ever seen that before in your life?
No, no.
Right? Like for a goalkeeper to, because one of the things about being a goalkeeper is guys are pressing you from distance. So normally they have pace going against them, right? And we always yell, oh, we go crazy when goalkeepers take a guy on. But that's because it's fairly simple. The player's coming at you. Westberg stopped the ball and then from a standstill, 1v1, tried to beat Vanderwater on the dribble to the end line. I've never seen that before in my entire life. It went poorly in Orlando 1.
The goalie wars are now at the hottest they've ever been. This is peak temperature. And I think Alex Bono probably wasn't the problem for TFC. I think we realized that. But the change was something that we all realized. Maybe Quinton is the better keeper. Chris Armas, I'm not going to crucify him for the goalie decision. But I think in general, David, the trends, TFC played pretty well overall. Yeah. I think offensively with Pozuelo in there, it's such a huge difference. But the biggest frailties with this team remain defensively and the ground the midfield can cover. And I think this game again confirms that they are not good enough back there to be where they want to be in the East. I don't know how they fix that currently.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I agree with you that they played well. And I think the most promising thing coming out of this game was Pozuelo looked like Pozuelo, because we haven't seen him in 2021. You don't know how long it's going to take a guy to come back. And he looked like himself, and you'd expect would only get better. So that was really big for TFC. Io gets a goal as well. That's pretty big, but especially in the second half. I mean, I think Omar kicked Daryl DK anytime they were within 5 yards of each other, including then the head collision at the end. And it just feels fragile. It's out on the losing goal, though. That one that Junior Urso scored that is the call that we came in on. It's just Marky Delgado falls asleep. So he's next to Urso. Urso plays it out wide, and DK's presence drops Omar deeper than he maybe should have been. And I think Michael's a little bit focused on Daryl because of his presence. And so it leaves a gap around the top of the 18 that Urso runs into. Markey doesn't chase him. And it's a pretty straightforward finish from there. Otherwise, I thought TFC was as good, if not the better team, the rest of the game. So I think it's a tough one to look back on. I think Pasuelo hit the post pretty flush as well earlier in the game. But it's one of those, Devang, where it's like, with the way everything's going, you don't have a ton of, oh, yeah, we can forget this one. The performance was better than result. Like, you're not in a place mentally as a group to do that because of the Josie stuff, because of the trend of the season so far.
And there's just not enough time to think about stuff or to work on stuff because the games come thick and fast now. I don't think they are in the Chicago or Cincinnati level of the league, though they find themselves with that company in the standings. They are a better team, but long-term, even just for this season, it doesn't look like the composition of this team is going to work out. And I think that leads to a whole lot of other questions about what they're going to do with Josie and everything else, because initially coming into the season, I had them as a, not in the top of the East, but a surefire playoff contender. And with the roster spend and everything else, they're built to make the playoffs. What if they're not on track to do that, say, in closer to the end of the summer, right, David? I think then we start talking about bigger changes. But I wonder what you think about like the Armas timeline right now.
I was leaving space for it to like develop. And I think I kept saying that, especially off of the CCL performance, which I thought was strong, was like, okay, I think he's earned a little bit of breathing space, a little bit of opportunity. And I think a lot of that's gone away. I don't understand. I think I've said this already. I don't understand the way the Josie stuff's been handled. And so that's going to fall on Ali. That's going to fall on Bill Manning. That's going to fall on Chris Armas. And so I don't think any of that's been good for the club so far. And that's on all their feet, as I'm saying. And so I don't feel super confident right now. And I think that's how a lot of people feel. Now, at the same time, you mentioned Vancouver on Friday night. I watched that game and it doesn't feel like there's a solution available to Vancouver. It doesn't feel like, oh, if they, you know, change how they want to play, if they move guys in and out of the starting lineup, it'll get better. Where with TFC, you do feel that way. And with Vancouver, I think I said this when the trade went down, I like Brian White on that team. Cavallini, because of the Canada, you know, being with Canada, he didn't start. I think if he starts and they play a 4-4-2, I think that's actually comfortable for a lot of those guys and they can get better. But you look at TFC and Pasuelo comes back in the team. Soteldo will at some point as well. Jonathan Osorio, we hadn't seen healthy until these Canada games. He looked good again. So you look at this Toronto team, they're too good, I think, to miss the postseason if they're remotely healthy. And as you said, they're not far enough behind yet for it to be a worry.
Speaking of Vancouver, I didn't think they played all that bad on Friday, but tactically, can you understand why they wanted to bunker when they did against that RSL team? Because it felt like that kind of shipped the game in many ways.
And that's where, to me, it's like, I don't know what the answer is there, right? Like there's been no moment. Most teams, you watch games they win and you say, oh, if you take out those 15 minutes and extrapolate it out, that's who they should be. They should play towards that. That has never happened with this Vancouver team basically in about a year, if not longer. So that's where, when I look at this team, I don't know where they can go, you know, you watch some teams, you go, oh, you know, it's unsustainable. But when you play super aggressive, they're able to at least create chances. I don't have any of that with this Vancouver team, except that Brian White scores on his first game, which is big. And Cavallini has scored when he gets chances. He just doesn't get enough. But no, I don't think there's a clear identity for this group. And it's tough, obviously, being stuck in Salt Lake and all that stuff, but doesn't feel like they're coming home anytime soon. And it doesn't feel like they have the energy to operate right now continuously in Salt Lake.
I did read today that Canadians, if they're vaccinated, can come back through the border starting July 4th without doing the mandatory quarantine. So I wonder if that'll speed things up for the clubs operating remotely in the United States going forward, but totally. And I mean, it's dispiriting as well, because I think once you bunker and then get, and you lose like that, really searching for positives, right? And it's just going from a bad situation to even worse for the Whitecaps. I also wanted to shout out Matt Turner, who I think might be one of the best players in the league. Full stop, man. Like, New England is a good team, a legit good team. We've talked about them for a while, but they beat New York City FC on the weekend. Matt Turner let up two goals, and I still think he made a collection of the best saves I've seen in a game in some time in any league.
Including a penalty kick save, including a double save that he didn't even have to make. Yeah. So you think there's any chance he could win an MVP? Someone asked me this morning.
Probably. I mean, no, I don't think so. I wonder if the league was different. Like if this was a more defensive minded league or we were playing in Italy. I don't know. I don't know if the way players are brought in as well with like the star level that we want to just defer to them anyways. But for me, who else is as important right now? Because I feel like New England, though if everything is going, I think a lot of things are going well. And like Carlos Seale is amazing, but Matt Turner is definitely one of those stories.
I agree with you. I hope he's the starter at Gold Cup for all the games for the U.S. And I think based off this performance, again, he legitimately should be in the conversation to start in World Cup qualifying for the U.S. Obviously, Horvath has now put himself in that conversation. I don't think Zach Steffen has done anything to solidify that spot even more, but it's his spot. But Matt Turner has been incredible. He's one of the great shot stoppers, not just in MLS right now, but probably all time at this point. And my coworker at Extra Time, Andrew Weeby, put together a list that he said going back to his first start. If you look at the stats, he's taken off 22 goals based off expected goals and no one else is over 13 in that time period. And that's including Andre Blake and Sean Johnson and Bill Hamid and all those guys, Stephen Fry as well. So that's how much better he's been than everyone else for a team that wasn't always like now they are a great team. That wasn't true until, I don't know, maybe June of last year. So most of his time was not like that.
He was facing major fire and now it's kind of cool to see the team doing well. Had some old and new, some goodbyes to Crew Stadium in Columbus. They shipped the Fire 2-0, expected, but I mean, an emotional occasion there. And then you had an emotional occasion in Austin with the opening of that stadium with Matthew McConaughey going nuts, 0-0 draw. But one of those, you know, this is a weird thing I do, but when I was younger, I used to love watching new stadiums open and like seeing the crowd and just like kind of seeing what was the like intensity of the moment and how much were these people into it. And I knew Austin was hyped for this, but I was a little bit taken aback, to be honest. That was crazy.
So as a third party MLSer, are you in favor of Austin as a fan base and an MLS city right now?
Ooh, so very interesting because I saw the pre-court banner get flown and I chuckled to myself and I'm like, yeah, stick it to them because I still do not feel cool about any of that situation. Do I cast blame on everyone involved at that stadium or the Austin fans now? No. And I will separate that. It worked out in the end for Columbus. So I think that changes how I view Austin. If it didn't work out for Columbus, I probably look at this with a just very sad look, but I'm okay with it, I guess.
Yeah. I think I'm the same as you and I'm the same on like the women's national team played there last week and then this game and like it's going to be fun to watch games there on TV, right? Like you're going to tune in and be like, oh, who's playing tonight? Oh, the Rapids are at home and Austin's at home. I'd rather put the Austin on one for, you know, for starters, not knowing opponent and like how the game's going to play out. So I thought it was fun. I think it's going to be super cool to watch that go down. Hopefully get out there one day. But it was pretty exciting to see it hit the ground. It's wild, Devang. Like everyone has a cool setup now. Cincinnati has a cool stadium. Columbus now is about to open one. Like there aren't really bad MLS atmospheres except Yankee Stadium left.
That's why the Canada game at Bridgeview, it felt like we were in a ghost stadium. Like no one was there. And this is like a stadium left behind by MLS 2 point, whatever, or wherever we're at now in the point standings. For sure. It is cool. I talked about being soccered out in the intro. Watched the majority of Atlanta versus Philadelphia, almost the entire game. I was going to see my parents for the first time in a while. I'm fully vaxxed. They're fully vaxxed. Great moment. But I ended up walking out of my door, maybe with around like 5 minutes of normal time. So of course I miss Jakob Glesnes blow the crap out of the ball. Three post hit. Brad Guzan only gets bangers scored on him is my confirmation.
Well, the first goal he gave up in this game was he dropped a shot into Corey Burke's path. So I don't know if that's accurate based off the 30 minutes played there.
If you want to slander Brad Guzan, I'll sit back and eat popcorn and listen, but that was good.
Oh, I'd be happy to. I think he's one of the more overrated players in this league. But in saying that, Atlanta, I think it was pretty obvious, especially from Jim Curtin saying it at halftime, which I thought was super interesting. Atlanta man-marked Philly, you know, every time they were in possession, which we see San Jose do a lot now, obviously in MLS, which means your shape gets pulled apart. And one of the ways that you man-mark, and it is exactly what you're thinking, which is like, okay, George Bello's assignment is Oliver Mbiazo, let's just say, which isn't true, but wherever Mbiazo goes, Bello follows him. So while Bello is quote unquote the left back, if Mbiazo runs over to his left midfield spot, Bello follows him across the field. You always leave one player available. So you're in, you know, there isn't no one in front of your goalkeeper. That's normally a center back, which means the attacking team center back is normally free in possession. And that was Jakob Glesnes. And he did it 4 or 5 times before the goal, just striding forward 30, 40 yards to the top of the 18, trying to play through balls, trying to cut it back, whatever. And then finally, in the 93rd minute, he was like, oh, it's just like practice, and just let fly on one of the great goals in MLS history. And it was like clutch. It was Dame Lillard-esque is what I'm calling it, Dame time. And it was pretty epic. So it was pretty awesome. I don't know what Atlanta's doing. Atlanta thought they were up 2-0 with the game over. They give up a goal 60 seconds later, and then they end up tying 2-2. And I think they're in more trouble right now than TFC is. If you're talking about the quote unquote big teams outside the playoffs.
Calling them bad, Guzan, now. Put it in print. That's final. All right. Plenty of MLS going on. And of course, Euros continue. Plenty has happened since we last spoke. England held to a draw by Scotland, a spirited Scotland side led by Kieran goddamn Tierney. One of the best fullbacks in the world.
Can he get Portugal tournament MVP because of the difference between those two performances?
He might. There's some problems now. Billy Gilmore has COVID. Some complications for Mason Mount and Ben Chilwell on the England side. Where shall we start, fellas? I mean, there's a lot to get to, but I think we just watched Netherlands take care of business against North Macedonia in a dead rubber. I think they're already through. But Frank de Boer, talking about Atlanta being in shambles, isn't it interesting that as Atlanta's in shambles, Frank is peaking with the Dutch national team on one of the biggest stages in the world? How do you like me now is my question.
I think Frank de Boer likes you a lot, right?
Right? You better.
I'm halfway on the Netherlands. I think there's a ton of talent on this team. I think I've said on the show before that under Ronald Koeman, they were the most entertaining national team in the world for a while before de Boer took them over. I still think that talent exists. I don't think De Boer is as toxic as everyone wants to make them seem, but I do not feel coming out of this group stage that I totally know who they are, if that makes any sense. If you look back at it, they took their foot off the gas against Ukraine, but played with a ton of energy. The Austria game, they win on a unnecessary foul from David Alaba. Otherwise, maybe that one's tied. And then in fairness, I didn't watch a ton of this one because I was watching Austria, Ukraine, but it's North Macedonia. They're the lowest ranked team in Euro history. You'd hope they'd win at home. So I'm not, Italy and Belgium are favorites in this tournament. They are two teams that have already clinched qualification. I do not feel the same about Netherlands.
England, as I mentioned, did not get the result against Scotland to assure progression into the next round. But I think the conspiracy theorists are thinking that they don't want first. The way the next round will work out, second might be better or possibly even third. But I think the biggest takeaway from that game was Harry Kane looked pretty off the pace. He's dealt with a shitload of injuries, to be fair to him. And he's got a whole lot of transfer rumors going on in the background. I think Man City came out with a $100 million bid, according to Fabrizio Romano.
I think £100 million, which is $140 million.
Right. And Sterling and Laporte's possible involvement in player swaps, a lot of stuff. But the craziest is that, would you drop Harry Kane? I guess we have to discuss this, but if you're Gareth Southgate, would you drop him for this next game? Of course not.
Zero chance.
There's a chance if he's not fit, right?
Well, there's just an argument you could create for me, which is a tie gets them through. Yeah. There's an argument you could create for the third group stage game, which is rotation. And I'm fine with that. I also just think from physical standpoint, why make him play every single one of these games if it's not exactly a must-win game? For their best team, there is no argument you can give me right now that Harry Kane's not a part of that. And I said it on last week's show, and you saw it again against Scotland. I thought it was fine to be respectful of the Croatian midfield and play Rice and Calvin Phillips, who are both incredible players. I think both of them on the field in a game like Scotland, you do not have the attacking pieces to dominate that game and create. And so I thought that hurt Harry Kane. And I think the pieces around him have not come together to make his life easier.
The big favorites in the group of death have played some of the most exciting football. I think Hungary being pretty good has added to that, playing at home as well with some of their awful fans and some of the good fans. I think we should highlight that.
But as a country, they suck. We can all admit that, right?
Right. There's some good stuff going on in the stadium, but there is a sect of fans who are awful, repugnant, hateful assholes who should not be part of these games. And I think if UEFA does move the final to Budapest for Wembley due to COVID concerns and because they want a full house, it's even clearer what they stand for. That was an aside, though.
It would be the first time an international football federation has sided with dictatorship in history. Right. We'll see you in Qatar, everyone.
The romantic world of football has been tarnished for the first time ever by this decision. Yeah. No, you're right. the games, though, I mean, Hungary held France. France having some drama as they do, but I think people really leaving Germany for dead. I was one of them, to be fair, after that first game was a bit lackluster, but they turned it around. Robin Gosens, the Atalanta experience, every player having a great tournament is basically on Atalanta.
For sure.
Wondering where they're at. He's been great. Germany looks cool again. Portugal left with the biggest questions, I think, going forward, Nick. These guys have so much skill, so much talent, but I guess the manager's under the microscope.
Yeah, that's been the main focal point is their defensive style of play, especially with the players that they have on the bench that are attacking first mentality, especially playing two defensive midfielders in both games. I think a lot of fans are really frustrated with the way Portugal played in that game. Not only, obviously, Nelson Semedo got kind of exposed, and so did Bernardo Silva defensively.
And in Semedo's defense, no support from anyone in his Genere vicinity. What is going on? Exactly. I don't understand that.
Even the pigeon wouldn't go on his side. The pigeon was only helping out Guerrero.
Yeah, the pigeon. but again, right off the hop, at the starting minute of the game, they played all behind the ball. And if you want to play like that against Germany, I think that's the wrong way to do it, especially if you want to expose their defense, which I think is pretty weak. And they didn't do that. And a really frustrating result.
I'm with everything Nick said. I'm a little all over the place with all the teams in this group, which I think is what makes it fun. With Portugal, the mind-blowing part is we're not saying put Bruno Fernandes in central midfield and Bernardo Silva. You have a player in Renato Sanches who started in central midfield for the best defensive team in Europe and won Ligue 1 this year with Lille. It's not that he can't help defensively. It's just that he does more than that, too. And that's where it's frustrating, where it's like your decisions aren't as complicated as you're making them. João Cancelo is a huge loss. I thought he was actually an even bigger. Well, at first, I thought he was a big loss against Hungary because he couldn't underlap for Bernardo Silva. And I think Semedo's so predictable because he's always going to go around the outside, and Silva could use more help. And then in this game, obviously, Cancelo's a better defender. And I think you would have dealt with some of that easier, although they weren't set up well to deal with it. But as Nick said, this is a Germany backline that just showed they couldn't really hang with people, and you never put them under pressure. I think the first time I realized Portugal was like knocking it around in the attacking third was in like the 65th or 70th minute. It took that long for them to step into the attacking third as a unit at any point in this game. And even if you want to hit in transition, which makes more sense, as they did on the goal, and Jota and Ronaldo, it could be super direct. Like, that's great. If Hummels is the middle of a back three, that's dangerous. That's going to work, especially with the way Ginter stepped up. They just were never aggressive about that. I think the one thing I would say, and I saw this stat a couple places, I think Bruno Fernandes played the most games in the world coming into Euros. I think he's at 76 games now in the last calendar year between Man U and Portugal. I would give him a rest in this final game. However it is, whether you slide Jota in field, if João Felix is healthy, slide Bernardo Silva, whatever it is, just get that guy like a little bit of a breather because he looks gassed.
We're running out of time, so I'm going to say this so Nick doesn't have a chance to respond, but Bruno Fernandes, not a big game player, is how I'll leave that segment.
Wow.
huge games coming up. I'm joking mostly, but huge games on Wednesday with that group settling and then England figuring out where they're going to place, and Italy looking good as always. Quickly, I mean, has your predictions changed at all so far? Are you sticking with what we said not long ago?
Do you remember what I said?
I do, vaguely.
I don't. Can you remind me? I
believe you picked Portugal. I think yes, Nick picked France. I picked France. You picked Portugal. Yes.
Okay. I'm not off the train yet. I still think the quality's there. Yeah. My other, I know in one other bracket, I did Sweden over Belgium in the final, which I'm feeling super good
about. Amazing. All right. Coming up this weekend, the CPL is back. They're holding their initial bubble phase in Winnipeg. A bunch of games kicking off on Saturday. Edmonton versus Atletico Ottawa. Pacific versus Wanderers. Forge, Valor. Cavalry, York United. Speaking of York United, we had special guest Michael Petrasso join DG to talk about York United. Their interesting, quote-unquote, lead up to the season. Plus, what to expect from Jimmy Brennan's outfit coming forward. David, how'd you feel about this one?
Awesome. Me and Michael Petrasso became best friends. I ended with a little trivia question for him, and it was a lot of fun. So it was a good convo. I guess we'll talk about this because we'll preview a little bit more CPL coming up, but it's going to be a bit chaotic. He's like, we don't know who anyone is. He's like, I can't even tell you our style of play, which I think is going to be weird to watch, but it also means we're probably going to have some wild results. I think it's sort of going to be fun, like preseason tournament style of just guys out there playing for a little while, which could be cool.
That's coming up next on AFP.
Well, we're very excited to talk to York United attacker Michael Petrasso. Michael, thanks so much for taking the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So we got to start with obviously the big Canadian news, which is World Cup qualifying, you know, making a little bit of history, getting to the octo now, we're calling it, no longer the hex. I just wanted to get from you, what was your experience watching this? What did it mean to you, maybe? What was the emotion as you saw it go down?
Well, I watched kind of every game throughout the qualifying, obviously to support the team. And I have some friends on the team as well, like close friends. So obviously good to watch. But no, I think this is probably the best Canadian team I've seen in my generation and I've obviously been part of, that are playing at the moment. And obviously with the players likes of Alfonso Davies and Jonathan David, it's just, I think they're on a whole another level. So I think like watching them play, and you can see Alfonso Davies in the games, he can take control of a game. And, you know, we have players now that can actually, you know, win us games, you know, whether we're under the cosh or, you know, we're attacking, they have the qualities to, you know, put it away with Jonathan Davies scoring 3 goals. So I think, you know, obviously it's exciting because, you know, obviously you're watching a lot of games and they're playing against teams that not necessarily like they should beat. So, But I think I'm excited to see them play against, you know, some of the teams like the US, Mexico, you know, and actually, you know, make a name for Canada and hopefully, you know, qualify for a World Cup. I think that'd be one of the greatest things in Canadian sports. So I think, I'm super excited. And obviously I've been tuning into all the games. So I'm happy that the boys got the job done, and now, you know, it'd be interesting to see where we go from here.
One of the things we've seen with this team is a lot of young players having a lot of pressure put on their shoulders. You've been in that situation, a young player with very little international experience stepping in and being a key part of a Canadian men's national team. What is that step up like? What is the difference between the club, you know, football that you've played going into the international game?
I think it's tough. I think like when I went to the representing Canada at the Gold Cup, I think it was in 2017, I was playing as a right back as well when I'm naturally a winger. And, you know, obviously it's pressure because especially like I think I had one chance where I cleared it off the line against Honduras, which kind of kept us in the game. And I think, you know, those are just moments that like, you know, as players, you have to like step up. And obviously at the time, like we were good, but we were just getting to where we are now. And, you know, I think like with the pressure that Alfonso Davies and Jonathan David have is a lot more than some of the other young players that have to step in because, you know, they're playing at the highest level in the world. And they come to Canada and obviously, you know, as fans, as players, you kind of expect them to, you know, carry a nation. And, you know, they're only 21, so 21, which is nuts if you think about it. So, yeah, no, I assume they have a lot of pressure, but honestly, you can watch the way they play. They don't really seem like, you know, they have, I think it's more confidence and swagger that they play with more than nerves or anything like that. So I think that's good. But obviously when the tougher opponents come along, you know, there'll be even more pressure on them. to, you know, get goals or, you know, to create chances for the team. So I think, with my experiences as well, the Gold Cup, I obviously played with Alfonso. And he was just young. I think he was only like 16, 17 at the time. And he was already fantastic then, finished leading goal scorer for Canada in that tournament. So I think, obviously watching him play today is amazing. So I think, they have a lot of pressure, but they seem like they handle it pretty well. So
the next job up is the Gold Cup. And you mentioned it, you played in 2017. You went the distance in four straight games for the squad. One of the unique parts about national team stuff is this tournament setup where the team comes together, you're living together. It's an experience that clubs don't have. So I wanted you to take us inside maybe a little bit what the national team's going to experience over the course of this summer. What is a Gold Cup like? What's the experience like as a player being in the group?
To be honest, it's not too bad. Like, I think like the whole, for a long period of time, I think we were maybe there for like 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, if I can remember. But like, obviously you have a roommate and usually you get to pick your roommate. So usually with one of your close buddies on the team. I think like you also have team meals together, but I think the players will get some personal time. Like usually you have afternoons off and stuff like that, where you can go visit the city. Obviously I don't know this year how it works with obviously the COVID restrictions and stuff, but no, I think like, you know, and I remember when I was playing, like we traveled from city to city. And like we played once in Phoenix, and then we played in, I think it was Houston. So like, you know, it's cool experiences to travel and play at different arenas. And, you know, I think, I think that'll be it. I think like, obviously it depends on like your groups and stuff like that, who you play against, like, you know, the games that you need to win and the games that you can, you know, play for points or stuff like that. But I think overall, I think it's a good experience.
How close does a group get? You know, you mentioned 4 weeks. maybe for a player, it sounds normal, but for us, we don't leave it and go live with our coworkers for 4 weeks normally.
No, I think the team needs to get close, because I think if you have bad experiences, is when you get a divide in the team and you get, you know, things like that where, you know, players don't like each other. And I don't see that with this group. Obviously, watching the games played, I think they had a lot of experienced players in the group that manage that. But I think, you know, you get pretty close. Like obviously when you're seeing each other every day, like morning, breakfast, lunch, dinner, when the team meals, you know, you have to like get close, and you kind of make closer friends, closer relationships that will lead to outside of football as well. And that's what I experienced when I went to the Gold Cup. So no, like, I think that's important as a group. But no, I think that, well, they've just been together now for all of qualifying. And then I think in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they'll have to go back and do it again. So might be good for them to get some alone time with their families and friends before they have to go back and do that again.
Get a little quiet. We finally saw the Gold Cup preliminary rosters came out, and obviously most of the players that were in World Cup qualifying are part of that. This group much larger than what it'll be. There were zero players from the CPL in that preliminary roster. What do you make of how John Herdman should see this league and how he can use this league to strengthen the national team?
I think it's tough, because I think there's players playing at a higher level, and the CPL is obviously new. You know, we've had one full season. I think after the first year, there was a lot of excitement around the league because, you know, it was very professionally done. And, you know, a first year as a Canadian soccer league is, you know, no one really knew what to expect. But then COVID kind of took a toll last year, and a tournament format, which is, it's not much, you know, and a lot of the players in the league haven't played since, what, last August, which is, I think it's insane. Like, you know, like it's basically taking a year off soccer if you look at it. And obviously it's not the Canadian league's fault. It's obviously due to the COVID restrictions and the government not allowing the sports to be played in Canada, which is fair, because obviously no one knows how to handle a situation like this. So, you know, I think it's fair in his choice. I think, you know, there's not many players in the Canadian league that have played meaningful minutes or games in any way since in a year. And I think you need to take players that have been playing in Europe and, you know, in other divisions that have, you know, been playing for a whole season and now in their off season, but still fit and ready to go for a Gold Cup. So I think, you know, I think that probably was around his decision making, but I think there are some good players in the CPL, whether they remain in the lead or they move on to push onto other opportunities, I think can help the national team. And I think they can, you know, whether that is off the bench or whether that is just in depth depending on player availability. And I think those are things that the John Herdman can look at. And I think he has done, as he's called a few players from the Canadian lead over the past two years. So
you mentioned that COVID-19 layoff, obviously, for a lot of players. For you, you went on loan back to England to Barnett. How did that deal come together? And what was the experience like?
Yeah, so I think it was, well, we were obviously off for a bit after the first season. And when we all went to lockdown, and then we had this tournament. I wouldn't really call it a season, to be fair. We had a tournament. We had like 7 games played for York. Mm-hmm. And I got an injury, I think it was the week before the tournament. So it kind of was like a shot in the foot. And throughout the whole entire time, I was struggling to make myself available, because it's not like I knew we had anything else after that. So like, it's either like I got some minutes in before the end of the seven games, or, you know, I might not play. And then after that, I kind of mentioned it around, and I mentioned it to the club that like I wanted to go on loan, because I didn't want to sit for a year. And a lot of teams looked like, obviously, because I didn't play a lot of football the previous year before that, the CPL ended, were a bit iffy. But then Barnett was willing to take the chance and kind of jumped at the opportunity. And obviously, it was back in London, which I'm very familiar with and have friends and family there. So it was more appealing. And yeah, I kind of went there, and honestly, I had an amazing experience. I know the team, we didn't do too well in the lead, but obviously there was no relegation this year due to the COVID. And I ended up scoring 10 goals, and I played 31 games, which I think me personally is a lot of minutes and a lot of games played over the last year. And I think, yeah, I'm kind of happy. And I had a good time. I got to see some friends that I haven't seen in a long time since I used to live in England. So no, I really enjoyed my time over there.
So what do you make of what we should see in this league for guys not like you who didn't go on loan, right? For a lot of these players, as you said, who haven't played since August, what should we expect as fans to see as the CPL gets off and kicking again at the end of this month?
I think you're going to see excitement. So I think the boys will be like buzzing, I think, to play, I think is the word to use. Like they'll come out like guns blazing, I think. You know, when you haven't played soccer in a long time, you get super thrilled, you know, to play in a professional game. It'll be very competitive. I think, I don't know, I'm just going off like York. I think I've come back and we've trained maybe a week mm-hmm. of training, and we're going to the bubble now this weekend, and we have a week in 2 weeks, and they haven't played in a year. So the boys are tired. Like it is going to be tough, I think, physically and mentally, especially we're playing on IG Field, which is a massive field. And in Winnipeg, which would be like 30, 33 degrees. So I think physically we'll expect to be, you know, a little bit drained. I think we'll start off strong, but we might have to, you know, ease off and play very tactical around the last second half and the last minute of the game, just until we get our feet mm-hmm. like under us. And, you know, we can obviously, plus we haven't played together, this team, you know, like we're all new players. Well, most of us are new players to the team, and, you know, they have time to adjust. But I think the boys are excited, you know, from the atmosphere that I've got training this week and with the guys, like everybody's ready to go. We have a very young squad. So I think fitness might play actually beneficial to us because, you know, when you're 20-21, I feel like you can get off the couch and run a marathon. So I think that will help our team a lot. But yeah, no, I think the boys are excited. I think you might see some, you know, scrappy passes and stuff early off. But after the first one or two games, you know, you'll see the quality come out of the players, and hopefully we can get off to a good start this season. So I think that's what the boys are looking forward to.
You're not allowed to call people young when you're 25. You are still young. You can't do the whole the kids on the other end yeah. of the roster.
But I honestly feel old on my team. I go into training and I see everybody 19, 18, 20, 21. And I'm like, holy, I think there's only like 4 or 5 of us that are above 25 or at 25. So I think it's when we play old v young, it's basically all young versus 5 of us. So I think... So I do feel young, but I am young. You're right, I am young. I can't be saying I'm old. I'm only 25. Still got a lot of years under me left.
Trust me, I've pulled 2 hamstrings the last 2 weeks. It gets old fast. You'll know when you finally cross that line. But you mentioned all the young guys and the roster turnover. There are some backbone pieces like yourself that are coming back, but it is a lot of new names. So what's the expectations inside the group? You know, what do you think this season can be for York United?
We have 2 good experienced goalies, and we have Roger, mm-hmm. Which is pretty like a solid backbone to our back line that was the last year. and we added Zator, which is another extremely experienced player. So center back situations, you know, we're good. We're solid there. And we've added some good young players like Ensa, who was very good in the bubble. So I think he'll be a strong component. And then kind of, yeah, like you said, the rest of the team is new. And I think I know some of the boys that come from my brother, because my brother plays with the TFC and they're friends with him and they're his age. And I've seen them play when I used to watch my brother play, you know, like Tyreek, Jordan. And I think, you know, they're good players and they can help the team a lot. But like I said, I think even us, we don't really know what to expect yet. We haven't had a friendly game. And you can only do so much in training. Like, you can be an amazing training player, but when you play in a game, it's when you see like who real players come out and play. And I think, I think everybody's kind of excited. I think everybody's waiting to see what we will be like. And I think that's an exciting thing. I also think it's a bit nervous because, you know, you don't really know what to expect from a lot of the players. And we have obviously some international players that, you know, I've never seen play before. So you just kind of, hopefully they adapt and adjust to the CPL level well. And I think that's the thing right now. I don't really know what to expect, that what we're going to get. But I know the team, as I've seen from the last 7 days, that they work extremely hard and everybody's eager to get going. I think a lot of the players have something to prove. You know, everybody is at that age where they want to make a name for themselves. And they see young players like Alphonso Davies and stuff like that. They're around their age and they're playing at the top level. And I think they want to get there. So I think this is their year where, you know, there's a competitions for spots. There are not many senior players that can lock in those spots. So it'll be based on performance where they can, you know, if they do well and score goals or assist or block chances, you know, they will get their opportunity to play. And I think that's what the motivation is this year. And I think a lot of the young players in, well, like even myself, I want to keep improving and keep doing well. That's why I want to go on loan. So even me, you know, I'm going to looking forward to starting the season and hopefully I can keep off my form that I had at Barnet. So I think, I think everybody's excited and eager, but I can't really tell you what to expect, to be honest. I don't know, even for style of play, I don't know what we're going to bring to the table, as we've only been a week into training. And I think we're just going to have to use some individual talent for the first couple of games till we get our feet under us. So I think, but I think everybody's excited. So I think you'll see a team that's going to work sincerely hard this year to get results and play well. So I think that's a good thing.
The whole league chasing Forge FC once again. It all kicks off Saturday, June 26th. And of course, York United kick off their season on Sunday, June 27th. The whole league playing in a bubble to start the year and then going home to finish out the rest of the season. Michael, really appreciate you taking the time to join us. I was wondering, do you want to close out on a trivia question? Are you a fan of trivia?
I can try, but I'm nervous if I don't know the answer then.
Well, because you played against England in U17 World Cup. Two of the players that were on the field when you played against them were on the field for their victory over Croatia in the Euros. Do you know who those two players are?
I know one for sure. It was Raheem Sterling.
Yep. Goal scorer.
The second one. Now I got to think, who was my age at that time playing? Or maybe a year older. Is it a defender? Am I allowed to get a hint?
You are allowed a hint. You're allowed any. First of all, you already got one, which is pretty impressive. And I threw this at you at the last minute. So you're allowed anything you want.
Well, Raheem Sterling back in the day was like, when I remember playing against him, I was like, wow, it's Raheem Sterling. So I think it's like, I remember that one. The other one, I'm not too sure.
I will give you a clue. The second one is not an attacking player.
It's a defender. Who started in the back?
Now I'm leading you the wrong way, though, is the problem.
Oh, but if I give you could be in the midfield as well.
I'm taking you down the bad road.
Could it be a goalie?
Yeah.
It is a goalie. And he was on the field, so was it Pickford? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was Pickford. Pickford played?
Yeah, Jordan Pickford started the game against you.
I didn't even know that. Wow. Well, look at that. There you go. You learn something new every day. And he's England number one. And I swear he conceded from our goalie.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I still don't understand that. I am looking at it, and it does say that Quinn Roberts had a goal, and I don't understand what that means. Quillen Roberts, sorry.
Yeah, well, he kind of stepped up to maybe like close to the center circle. I think it was like maybe like 2-3 minutes left in the game, and he kicked it, and it was raining, and it bounced on the penalty spot, and it bounced over Jordan Pickford, which is an amazing accomplishment for him. So
there you go.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow. And now Jordan Pickford is England's number one and Michael Petrasso looking to be York United's number one this season in some epic gear as well. Michael, I don't know if you're in the new kits yet.
Yeah. Oh, no. We changed the color and the color looks really nice. Even our training gear and travel gear is really nice. So, yeah, we actually have some decent kits, new logo. So I think we're flying. We're ready to go.
They are awesome. And if you're a fan of those kits, we at AFP will be giving away a York United kit coming up this season. So keep eyes out for that. We're really excited to watch you do your thing, though, and excited for the start of the new season. So, Michael, once again, thanks for joining us. You get 50% at a minimum on the trivia. So you're already number one because we've never done trivia before. So you're first in our standings.
All right. Perfect. Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome back, and now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who has sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send in your own question, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. Our first question goes to Derek, and he asks, what are your early CPL predictions? Champion, Dark Horse, MVP? DeBang?
Great question. Excited for this season. Shouts to everyone involved for working to get this going in Winnipeg. Should be great. Now, this isn't going to be bold. I mean, hey, he's going to pick against Forge, right? That's what the haters are probably saying. And they've brought Omar Brown in from Independiente, someone we know well in CONCACAF world. So the rich get richer, right? But I'm going to pick Pacific to beat Forge in the final. My huge prediction, Pacific FC led by 25-year-old Marcos Bustos. And I think one of the better young center backs in Thomas Müller, Jigier. I think the combination with those two and Pamadou Ka having another year with this group bodes well how they finished last year as well. And in the island coming into the playoff, I think that experience was good for them. So I'm picking some old blood in Forge. I think Smyriotis and what they're doing there remains elite and the class of the league. But I think Pacific or Halifax will be the two biggest contenders, not Cavalry, because I'm a little suspicious of them defensively, and I think Pacific's young players have basically grown up in this league and should be ready, much like some of what Halifax is doing with Steven Hart. So that's my league prediction.
Yeah, I actually think I agree with you on Cavalry for sure. Of like, if that defense isn't rock solid, I don't think they create enough to be super dangerous. And right now you have to pick for Forge. After the 2 years they've put together and the way the two seasons were different, and for them to succeed in both, as well as the success in CONCACAF, and to just still have so much of that spine, I still love Dan Crutzen. I think he's the best defender maybe in the league. You know, obviously, Devang brings up some good names as well there, but I still think he's phenomenal. Obviously, the midfield's still around, Sabak back, all that. So it's hard to pick against them. And as you said, Omar Brown, he's a huge addition as well. And I actually also like Halifax and Pacific as the two teams that could contend and kind of reach that peak this year. And obviously, I'll pick any team that Pamodaka works for. But I love the group he's put together and his willingness to let that group just go out and play and enjoy the game. And I think in a year like this, where now you get back to home stadiums, you get some fans in the building. Now that matters in a different way, because you can start to have that energy and you can have that home field advantage. So I like those two as well. But I think it's going to be an awesome start to the year.
And my MVP shout, because I'm Pacific to do so well, I think Marcos Bustos has to have a massive year if that's going to be true. And I think he is he's a little older than Tristan Borges, but I think if you're looking at what this could mean for his career, and if he thinks he can play at a higher level or wants to play at a higher level, he's probably at that point right now where it's do or die. So huge year for him, huge year for Pacific. That's my pick.
I would love to see Teron Campbell, by the way, have a good season out there. I'm just throwing that out there.
Alex asks, which of the dual nationals on the 60-man list do you think we'll see at the Gold Cup? Do you think Marcelo Flores could be the creative midfielder that feeds Fonzie, David, and Laren?
Arsenal's Marcelo Flores. Let's go.
I don't want to sound too ridiculous too quick, Devang, but doesn't it feel like with the quality in the squad, the depth, the success already this year, that we should slightly be past the like, this guy plays for a youth team in Europe and therefore he is like ready to start for the Canadian national team?
Yes, I think so. I think, to be fair to the question, I think this is more like, and Alex is saying like, well, is Jevison a possibility? Like, are these guys going to play for Canada? Is this really happening with qualifiers in the distance? But I think you're right. I mean, there is, though, maybe if you had a critique of what's missing in this team, I think that creative facilitator is slacking, right? Like that guy in the center of the pitch who can dictate things. I think I like what maybe what I would rephrase is like Osorio brings something different. Eustáquio brings something different. Mac brings something different. I think you are missing maybe that creative valve to settle something when you're stuck in the 80th minute in Honduras and there's absolutely nothing available to you from the defense center who's set up in a lower block and you need some magic from the central of your midfield. I'm not saying Marcelo Flores could be that guy now, but I can see why Alex is asking.
For sure. Yeah, and I get that, and I get be excited. I didn't want to throw complete cold water. And I would say this, with the way this team is set up, I don't think you're ever going to want that guy in the near future if everyone's healthy, because you want people like Marc-Anthony Kay and Osorio who are working hard enough to allow Fonzie and Jonathan David to be those guys. And so that's the difference with this team. And I think Eustáquio does enough with his deep passing through into the channels and Osorio's ability to, you know, be that roaming 10 who finds the game, who either is filling in when guys are coming off the wings or, as we've seen, can be the guy setting up a Larin or scoring like he did off Pozuelo this weekend. I think those are the guys who do that job for you. But I think it's a great question. And I think I'm not against using this Gold Cup to, you know, cap tie and bring those players into this group, because I don't think you're going to get your number one team. And we saw in this preliminary roster a ton of the number one guys on this list. I'd be shocked if most of them, you know, are coming to this tournament. I just don't think you bring a Jonathan David who's had all these games. I think you want Kyle Larin ready for preseason, so he's having a good European season when you get into World Cup qualifying. Like, I think that's the focus with most of these guys. I can't even imagine a reason you'd bring Atiba Hutchinson, except if Atiba demanded to come. So I don't mind getting a Marcelo Flores into a group like this. I'd still like to see Ricardo Ferreira, because I think the biggest hole is center back, and he may not be that guy, but I would like an opportunity to see it with him just in case he is.
Right. And when I mentioned missing that AM attacker midfielder, the biggest hole remains center back. That is fair. Don't get it twisted. That is true, true, true. And let's not undersell. It seems like Ayo Akinola chose Canada, which going forward is absolutely huge. I think he might do the NWO shirt turn up at the Gold Cup and reveal a US kit, which would break my heart. And I don't think it's going to happen. But going forward, in terms of convincing other people, like if Daniel Jevison's like, if other players who are a bit older than me, but I think he's in a different spot being in England. But if he's seeing this and watching that, I think it's only a good thing for the Herdman program.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it was pretty exciting to see Jevison's name on there. I'd like to see Theo Corbenu come to this Gold Cup, because I think he's been exciting when he's gotten on the field. And so that's a guy that I think this is where you get him some minutes. And I think Ayo should be the starter. Just throw him out there for at least three group stage games. Give him the minutes. Make him a part of the group. Make him feel a part of it. So I was excited about a lot of the names on here, Devang. I was glad to see Tyler Pasher get the call. I was glad to see Ralph Priso get on the list. Like, I think this is the list. When I look at my depth chart for Canadians, most of the guys are in this 60.
Right.
And finally, Jonathan asks, and this is a good one, who are you tipping to win the A-League Grand Final on Saturday, Melbourne City or Sydney FC?
The big game, David. Have you read up on what's going down this Saturday? Potentially, I think there is some confusion of where this game is actually going to be held because of coronavirus concerns. But it's the big one: Melbourne versus Sydney. The CFG behemoth operating a bit differently. Australia, though, I think looking at their team, a lot of young Aussies in the mix. A couple of them scoring in the semifinal against Sydney, led by, I had to check this, Adam Lafondre. Reading legend. I remembered, I think the Shamak game happened against Reading with Lafondre on their team, if I remember
is
correctly.
Is Leroy Lita available for call-up as well for this game? Wow, that's a throwback.
So I'm gonna pick Alfie and Lafondre and Sydney to win this as well, because I think it would be a nice send-off for him at 34.
So when I was 18, I lived with an Australian, and he was a huge Aussie rules football fan. And he would always say the team he rooted for, he'd say he barracked for. So he barracked for Hawthorn which in AFL is in Melbourne because all the teams are around Melbourne. I don't know if that's accurate, so I'd love for anyone out there who listens to this show to tell me if that's a thing Australians actually do say. I've been to Australia. I forgot to ask anyone. But I'm just going based off cities here. I'm a Melbourne guy over Sydney every day of the week, so I barrack for Melbourne, so I'm going to go Melbourne. But you asked if soccer had broken me yet. It wasn't close, but if I stayed up to 2 a.m. to watch A-League semifinals and finals, then I might be broken.
When I read off to you the stakes of this game before we recorded, the reaction you gave me sounded like you thought I was broken. So it's perhaps a good time to leave it.
I was just excited that you were excited.
That's great. So you know what?
That's you got knee deep in this one, and I was here for Devang to get involved.
We'll watch Bobo, Brazil's Bobo, Ben Warland, Joel King. Should be good. All right. That's it. Another episode of AFP in the books. A reminder, if you haven't, give the show a rating or a review wherever you get it. It'd be really helpful to us. We're also on Patreon, as we mentioned. Bunch of new subscribers. Big thanks to you guys for helping us keep making this show. We're close, really close to our goal. Once we get to 30 more interviews, one-on-ones, exclusives, we'll actually have to do them now. So make us do the work is my request. As always, a big thank you to producer Dylan Wilson on the ones and twos, and for Nick, David, and myself. Thanks, as always, for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you soon.